This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview. Welcome to the Research Talks podcast with Alan Green, and on a Friday, and we could sing a song, Alan. I don't know if you know the song. It's Friday then, it's Saturday, Sunday. But, you know, it is a Friday. It is a nice sunny day outside. I'm in quite a good mood.
Or we could sing Friday, I'm in Love by The Cure.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. There we go.
Friday, I'm in love.
There we go. We both had a sing song. Fantastic.
So that's an unusual introduction.
Yeah, we have to do these episodes often.
It'll go viral off the back of this, Mark, you know that.
So how are you? You're doing okay, yeah?
Yes, I'm good, thanks. We've had a nice sunny week up to a point, and then midweek it's just clouded over and it's all grey. The sun was poking out this morning, but it's a mixture of sun and cloud, so all's good. But anyway, it's Friday and the weekend approaches.
And after a bit of a depressing week or 2 weeks almost on the stock market, it is good that we're coming to the weekend. And today we are revisiting a couple of companies that we spoke about recently, and that is Conroy Gold, CGNR, because of course their joint venture everyone was waiting for changed, and it looks like it's potentially a much better deal, certainly from Richard Conroy's reaction it seems to be. And of course we're talking also about Coincilium and the NFT, that's non-fungible token opportunity. So which one would you like to pick first, Alan? You choose.
Well, let's start with Conroy, shall we? Conroy Gold, and as you rightly say, I think they handled the transition very well indeed. And there was, I think, there was a blip in the share price on the day, but then it just went normal service was resumed, which is very good. So Conroy Gold, CGNR, as the epic code, of course, currently has a market cap of 10 million. Shares are traded as high as 32p on the year, and as low as 0.05p. So we're currently pretty close to that year high today, as we speak. Run by the eponymous Professor Richard Conroy, who shows no signs of slowing down, masses of energy, and of course renowned for the other companies he's founded and worked with, Conroy Petroleum Natural Resources PLC, Gelmoyes Inc. Founded Conroy Gold in 1995, and in his spare time he's an emeritus professor of physiology, which is quite some achievement. But and of course Maureen Jones, the company secretary, also a connection with Carillion Diamonds there in the past, and Maureen is effectively running the company on a day-to-day basis. The company has a number of assets in Ireland, northeastern Ireland, along what's called the Longford Down Massif, which is crossing County Longford, County Down, and Tushion Armagh. The Clontibret, Clay Lake, Glanish, and Sliabhgar assets have been aeromagged. They've been sampled. There are lots of historical gold mines over the region, and silver mines and other mines, in fact, antimony, in fact. Conroy have been working over the past 10 or so years to establish a JORC resource, which they did a few years back. They established a JORC resource of 517,000 ounces of gold at an average of 2 grams per ton. The company have progressed to a point where they were able to get it so far and then couldn't get it any further. So, of course, last year we had the joint venture announcement with Anglo-Asian Mining to develop a gold mine and to continue the exploration. This seemed to be very well accepted, and obviously the share price rocketed higher on the news, and then it seemed to stall, and we didn't seem to that there was little progress from the company in regard to getting the documents signed and getting the first phase of the agreement into life. So nonetheless, the company has raised a significant amount of money over the past year. In fact, we had the half year results recently, and over the half year to the end of September, it raised 1.2 million. And since that time, has raised a further 455,000 in warrant exercises, and in fact, another 65,000 earlier this year. So the company has plenty of cash in the bank, but clearly it can only go so far with this. It can only fund so much exploration work, and of course that's the issue it's faced in regard to progressing its assets. On February the 10th, the company announced its Clay Lake asset that's in Armagh. A Ground Geological Survey was undertaken by a company called Golder Associates, great name for a geological survey company, at the Cargellis-Goran area northeast of the Clontibret mine, and that survey revealed important geological structures in that area that hadn't been identified up to that point, and a number of new parallel structures that were in addition to what the company suspected were there. So a follow-up drill program is planned. Professor Conroy said at that point that the Longford Down Massive was a significant and scalable opportunity. And of course, with a JORC compliant resource, there was substantial potential to increase increase and develop the asset. He also likened the asset to that there were geological similarities with the Fosterville mine in Australia. Of course, we've spoken about the Fosterville mine on numerous occasions. In fact, I interviewed Craig Brown from ECR Minerals yesterday. That can be seen on our YouTube channel or on Twitter. And Craig was discussing the Fosterville mine and the production there, and also discussing the way the ore was brought out of the ground. So similarities with that, obviously, you know, it indicates a great potential. Then February 26th was a watershed moment for Conroy. The company announced it had terminated negotiations with Anglo Asian Mining. Of course, you know, this had been in the melting pot for some time, and nothing had happened. And on the same day, announced a joint venture with Demir Export AS, a Turkish company. The commitments are as follows. Demir will spend 4.5 million euros to earn a 25% option in phase one of developing the Clontibret gold mine. The project is referred to as the Project Innes. It'll spend a further 4.5 million euros for a further 15% in phase two. That'll, of course, take it 40% overall. And to get the mine to construction-ready status after that point, whatever funds required will be spent. And at that point, it earns a 17.5% option, taking it up to a total of 57.5%. Conroy, of course, will retain 42.5%, and that'll include a carry loan option on any other capital expenditure to take the mine into commercial production. Once this agreement has been approved and signed, Demir will make an initial payment of 1 million euros. And of course, that was the point that was never reached with the Anglo-Asian agreement. So all eyes are on Demir and Conroy to get that over the line. But once it's over the line, I believe this will be progress pretty quickly, and obviously given the backdrop in gold, which has been well discussed and aired on this podcast, I expect that we're going to see some decent progress from Conroy as the year progresses.
Okay, so obviously the joint venture with Anglo Asian was what everyone was anticipating. And it's now switched, and I agree. I think the way it transitioned was very smooth, because it could have been done in a way that was not as good as it was done, but it's been done in a very good way. And I think it speaks quite a lot, would you agree, to the what Conroy have there, that the fact that they had another party basically come in and trump the offer, because from what I can see, Demir Export are a much bigger organization. They've got a much bigger capital, you know, money behind them to take this forward. And although it's perhaps not a heard of name, they are actually a very huge company. And the deal to me looks like a better deal than the previous AAZ one.
I think you're right, Mark. You know, that's certainly the case. I mean, AAZ, I think the AAZ agreement was first aired on the 21st of July last year, and really it was aired and spoken about, and then it just went quiet. So I think that's the issue with any joint venture. For whatever reason, Anglo-Asian, of course, are a listed company. They've got other assets that they have control of too. So I don't think they were fully focused on the project. But Damir, I think certainly are. As you say, that their asset base is much larger than that of Anglo-Asian, and I think they. Certainly, the commitment to the mining, the funding, and also the option that Conroy have at the end. You know, it's if they develop that mine and develop that that asset to get the gold out of the ground, Conroy is going to be a very valuable company. And certainly, we're sitting here today with a market cap of 10 million. You know, once I think that first million goes in, and we have the first 4.5 million commitment after that. I think we're going to see that value very much reflected in Conroy's share price as we go forward through the year.
Yeah, I think so. It's a very cheap share market cap at the moment, but you've got the Damir export. It's a £5.4 billion company, as opposed to Anglo-Asian, which is £172 million. It's a much bigger company. And okay, Conroy looks like they're going to give away slightly more percentage. It's only 45% at Anglo-Asian versus I think about 42.5% or something. You know, it's a very slight bigger percentage that they will effectively have to give away. But they get the million euros up front, which is fantastic. That was never part of the deal. And they've got the backing of this huge conglomerate. So I think it's a much better deal for Conroy. And yeah, the value of 10 million market cap, very low.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think also we've spoken about the relative valuation of microcap gold mining companies. You know, we've looked before at the valuation of companies. I think a couple of years ago, microcap mining companies trying to make some headway were valued at about 2.5 million, and of course today that's moved to probably 8 to 10 million. So Conroy is right at that level. You know, it's really just an entry level microcap mining company, but with a JORC resource asset and a deal in the bag to develop it. So, so the upside from here, I think is quite considerable. And as you say, you know, Damir are a multi-billion-pound company versus Anglo-Asian, which are worth about 150 million. So, exactly. That really says everything. That really says it all. But I think you know, we want to see progress on this, and I'm sure we will. And certainly the backdrop, not just for the next 6 months, but I think for the next 10 years. You know, we're looking at a very stable, conducive backdrop for mining companies to develop assets like this. And of course, big companies like Damir will be looking for opportunities. And the fact that they've signed this agreement with Conroy is highly significant, you know, and it's also highly significant for the region too, because clearly you move towards developing a mine that's going to create employment, it's going to create prosperity for the region. There are a whole load of benefits that come with it. So it'll be a huge achievement.
Yeah, good. Okay, great. Thank you very much on Conroy Gold there. So let's move on to something completely different and talk about non-fungible tokens, Alan, with Coincilium.
And now for something completely different. Yes, indeed. Okay, so of course we spoke and you of course interviewed Malcolm Pallet, the executive chairman of Coincilium. Coincilium are an Aquis listed company, shares company trading at 7.5p, gives it a market cap again 11 million. So that's just really on the in fact 10.5 million. So it's just on the cusp of being an entry level micro cap company. But Coincilium were they have history in their own right. They of course are Aquis listed and OTC listed in the USA, and they were the first blockchain cryptocurrency company actually to float on the market. Initially, they were an advisor and investor to crypto companies, but pivoted last year. by entering the NFT space. That's the non-fungible token space. CoinSelium have also relocated to Gibraltar, and Gibraltar is the state there are very positive and provide a lot of support and security for companies operating there. And clearly, with the march of the crypto world, that's cryptocurrencies, non-fungible tokens, and blockchain in general, some exiles have been less accepting of companies operating in this area. But Gibraltar is certainly not one of them. So CoinSelium Gibraltar has been set up, and Malcolm has worked to develop and take steps forward with companies to develop an operation there, providing services to build platforms for products and assets requiring NFTs. So before I get into where CoinSelium have taken the business in this direction, I'm just going to look at non-fungible tokens and what they are. So this is non-fungible tokens are a means of digitizing collectible and virtual assets. In that, just as you have an item of currency with a Bitcoin, with Ethereum, the digitization of an asset creates a value or reflects the value in that asset in the digital world. With blockchain, compared to most other currency systems, blockchain creates an immutable record. And of course, once that record's there, it's there for good. And it can be, in terms of ownership, in terms of traceability, it's very easy to follow through and find who the original owner is. NFTs have emerged over the past few years as a new asset form, and I'm just going to quote some numbers to you. Currently, the top 100 non-fungible token projects have a market capitalization of 2.9 billion, and over 1 week, the average trade volume per day was some $775 million. Now, that just gives you an idea of where this market's going, but we're still just scratching the surface. Some of the earlier adoptions of NFTs involve, for example, the Austrian Post Office, who issued a limited edition stamp with a digital counterpart, and CoinSelium, of course, announced a contract with the Gibraltar Philatelic Bureau to produce their own limited edition stamp with a digital counterpart, and that will be progressing during 2021. We'll have more news on that shortly. That was one example. Then we have other examples of art selling as NFTs. The Reuters, in fact, picked up on a story earlier this week. A 10-second video clip sold by a well-known artist in the area sold for $6.6 million. That really made me sit up and take notice. And you look at assets like this, something digital that's out there on the net in virtual space, the applying value and being able to retain that ownership in whatever sphere, whatever area that asset is used or where it appears, is really a huge step forward. And we're seeing new evidence of this emerging all the time. So you've got artists, the musical artists, of course, taking up NFTs. The lead singer of a band called Linkin Park sold assets or sold some memorabilia online and was able to realize all the cash, whereas had he done it through the conventional channels, I think he said he'd have realized a very small percentage of the cash he would be owed for that. We've also seen William Shatner, of course, sell some of his memories. That's Captain Kirk, sell some of his memories and assets online. We've seen people sell Pokemon cards. I think the YouTube artist, what was his name, Mark?
Logan Paul.
Logan Paul, that's right. He has a Pokemon card which he's developed, and we're seeing this this move into virtual space, which is quite astonishing move. Something I have to say, I'm still trying to get my head around, but there seems to be this this move into decentralized space where there are assets. I think the popular phrase is "Let's go to Decentraland," and there's this huge it's been described as digital land grabs going for millions of dollars. Latest incarnations include, of course, the rock band The Kings of Leon, who announced they announced yesterday they were offering their new album as an NFT in the music industry first. And the band made the point that the music that they put out and that they release, the streaming download services are all very well, but there are so many pirate services out there that they can't. A lot of the times, the music file is just grabbed and streamed online, and they never see any compensation for that. By doing it with an NFT, they've got that immutable record that's created using the blockchain platform, and of course, they're able to track and trace all of the ownership and the manner in which the music is used. Not only that, the fans that buy the music as an NFT will also have access to perks such as limited additional vinyl versions of the album and also front row seats in future concerts. So there's a whole raft of benefits that come with it. But I think probably the biggest single stamp of validation that you could have for this is the fact that the auction house Christie's have now taken up NFTs and launched an NFT collection, and they are the first auction house to recognize NFTs as an asset and an art form, and to create an auction system based around that. So it's NFTs are coming of age, but we're still really just scraping the surface. And back to Coincilium, you know what Coincilium have done. They've really taken full advantage of this by, firstly, they have an agreement with Red Fox Labs in Vietnam to develop the digital collectible and virtual asset platform, and of course, earlier this week, the company announced that it had struck a deal with IOV Labs to set up Nifty Labs with Indorse to set up Nifty Labs in Gibraltar as a lab to develop NFT smart contracts, most of the NFT builds at the moment take place on the Ethereum platform, but Nifty Labs will be building a bridge for Bitcoin, so the Bitcoin platform can be utilized as well, and that's a key step. And I think it's all about we're hearing about these assets, and obviously the key I think for most users is, well, that's great, I'd like to buy an NFT in whatever, but how do I go about it? And of course, if you've got Bitcoin, it then means you can actually take part and purchase via the platform that you're using. So this is where Malcolm Palais and Coincilium are taking the business, the direction they're developing the business in. The company is well funded. On February the 8th, they reported that crypto assets, excluding the cash at the bank, were just under $2 million. And that includes crypto treasury and also the RIF tokens that it owns with the RSK smart platform developed by IOV Labs. The company also announced this week it had received a further $250,000 in warrant exercises, and coupled with the investment by IOV Labs of $330,000 in December last year, of course, it means the company are fully funded and well placed to finance and undertake the developments and work that they'll be doing this year. The CEO of the company, of course, is Eddie Travia, and Eddie is he launched Seedcoin some years ago, and he's well known in the crypto and NFT industry. He's also an expert in private, has a lot of experience with private equity and setting up and developing labs to develop blockchain assets and business ventures. Tony Saren, former non-exec, stepped down earlier this week also, and a new non-exec has joined the board. A lady with a master's in art called Federica Velardo. She's Italian and UK-based lawyer, and she specializes in startups and financing. So a good addition to the board. And I think, as I say, coincidentally with their valuation currently at just 10.6 million, I think there's an awful lot of upside to come. But I urge you to take a look at the NFT market. This is burgeoning. It's huge, and this is the space that Coincilium are in, and I think they've got a unique opportunity once they set up Nifty Labs in Gibraltar to monetize this and to basically build platforms and digitize assets from in this new space.
Yeah, I think the NFT market is huge. I mean, only just recently, it's actually quite scary that when we spoke about Coin, I think it was, well, it was early in the year, early in January. And even just in, you know, a few weeks, you can see how that market has completely taken off. It is, it's actually quite scary, but Coin are right there at the cutting edge of it, really. And NFTs, it does take a little bit of time, I think, certainly from my point of view, just to try and get your head around it. It's perhaps a bit like trying to understand cryptocurrency in the early days. It does take a little bit of time to understand it, but effectively, in the simple terms that I can put it in, and you can tell me what you think, is it is digitizing assets. And the best example I can think of is an artist, a digital illustration artist, for example. They can create their piece of digital art and they can sell that as the original, but it's not like a painting. There's nothing physical there because it's all on the computer. They can yep. sell it as an original, and the NFT is proof that you are the original owner. And then you've yep. got the immutable record on the blockchain, just as you would, you know, transact in real physical art. And that's just one use of almost unlimited. Yeah.
It's absolutely nebulous, isn't it? I mean, there are so many potential applications, and applications I'm sure even those right at the front of the market haven't thought of yet. But but yeah, that's a great example. But I also think it's already solving a problem. You know, the fact that Kings of Leon have decided to release their new album as an NFT, it's indicative of the problems faced in the music industry, that you have these pirate streaming platforms that will just steal your music file and charge people to download it, and the artist never sees a penny of that. With NFTs, of course, you've got absolute proof. You've got that immutable record all the way through. You're the artist. You basically produced this, wrote this. It's your piece of work. Therefore, you have an audit trail that goes right through to ownership and solves that streaming issue. You know, knocks it into a cocked hat. So you know, that's really important, I think. And I'm sure we'll see more artists doing that. But it's already been taken up. If there's a great article on Forbes, actually, written by a lady called Kathy Hackle, Four Things Brands Need to Know About NFTs, and you know, you can Google that and read it. But it just gives you it'll just give you some background on how artists are using it. And I think the Instagram artist Beeple, he's artist on Instagram, and he's now selling of course his art as NFTs, and so you can view it, but you can't grab it because you're not the owner, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that Christie's, the huge auction house, is adopting it, that's a huge endorsement. It's like MasterCard coming out and saying we're going to start supporting cryptocurrencies on our whatever our platform. You know, that when you get big names like that endorsing it and engaging in transactions, that's the validation that any suspicious people that think it's just a fad or whatever can take as confidence in the concept and that going forward.
Indeed, and I think the next step now. I mean, there's a In this Forbes article, there's a platform called the Dematerialize, where apparently it's a place where you can seamlessly pass fiat currency or use fiat currency to purchase NFTs or crypto and so on. And I think that's probably, we spoke about Mode, of course, a few weeks ago. That's got to be one of the next steps for Mode, to develop a platform where as well as Bitcoin, you can actually purchase NFTs all in one place, and it's that one wallet solution. So it's great they're out there, but the process of actually purchasing NFTs at the moment is probably convoluted. It's a slightly convoluted process for the layman, but once we get over that, once you have an app that will seamlessly do that, then it'll just be like ordering your weekly shop from Sainsbury's.
Exactly. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, well, thank you very much, Alan Green, again, for talking to us there about Conroy Gold and Coincilium. And I wish you very pleasant Friday and weekend, and we'll no doubt speak again in a week's time.
We'll no doubt sing next week, Mark, yes.
Thanks, Alan. Thank you for listening to this Stockbox interview. For more information, interviews and videos, visit our website at stockboxmedia.com or give us a follow on Twitter by searching @StockboxMedia.